Good afternoon in Europe and good morning to the United States. I welcome you to the Q1 first quarter results of K+S AG. Just before we start, I just want to explain that we usually in the first quarter have our conference call one day after the AGM and one day after the publication of the results because of the AGM. So please excuse that. I hope anyone that was not dialing in yesterday at 3 o'clock. This is always the case at K+S in the first quarter to have this call one day after the publication because of the AGM. First, Mr. Steiner, CEO of K+S, will comment on the results shortly achieved in the first quarter, and he will also comment on the current and future market environment. Afterwards, the executive board members, Mr. Steiner, Mr. Faker, and Mr. Nonnenkamp, will stand ready to answer your questions. Before I hand over to Mr. Steiner, please allow me to mention that this presentation contains facts and forecasts that relate to the future development of K+S Group and its companies. Those forecasts are estimates that we have made on the basis of all the information available to us at this moment in time. Should the assumptions underlying the forecast prove not to be correct, or should certain risks, such as those referred to in the recent risk report, materialize, actual developments and events may deviate from current expectations. The company assumes no obligation to update the statements contained in this presentation, save for the making of such disclosures as are required by the provisions of law. I'm now happy to hand over to Norbert Steiner.
Which is here. Good afternoon and good morning to everybody around the world listening to us. I would like to welcome you to our Q1 conference call as well. After the very difficult year 2009, I am pleased that the K+S Group has some positive results to report again. In brief, we have seen fertilizer demand increase substantially, and we have benefited from the Morton Salt consolidation and from a good de-icing salt business overall. But let's take a closer look now to the market environment in the first quarter. This is slide number one, which I'm referring to. First, the fertilizer business sector. The first quarter of 2010 was characterized by a significant revival in demand for fertilizers. In preparing for the spring season trade sector demand in the Northern Hemisphere, particularly in the case of potash fertilizers and complex fertilizers, rose considerably, whereas last year saw strong purchasing restraints. The contracts concluded by some potash suppliers with Chinese and Indian customers at the end of last year and at the beginning of this year supported confidence in the stability of potash prices and therefore supported demand. The majority of potash producers were back at almost full utilization of their production capacity. However, primarily in the Northern Hemisphere, logistical problems, partly due to winter weather conditions, restricted the flow of goods to some extent. The salt business. In the Western European de-icing salt market, the exceptionally long winter in the first quarter resulted in very high demand. While the winter in the United States passed relatively normally during the first quarter, Canada experienced a very mild winter overall. The North American price level for de-icing salt was lower than during the same period of the previous year, when it had benefited from supply bottlenecks. Both food grade and industrial salt saw high demand as they were used as de-icing salt agents as well. The demand for salt for chemical use slightly improved. Slide 9 on the key figures in our first quarter 2010. The market environment, as described, led to the following group results. Overall, revenues were up by 43% to a good 1.5 billion euro, whereas our EBIT 1 increased much more than that by 54% to about 268 million euro. On the earnings before income tax level, we saw the influence of a weaker financial result based on higher interest expenses due to this acquisition, as well as one-off effects from early repayment of loans. The financial result thus amounted to a negative 30 million euro. Free cash flow before acquisitions and divestments reached 327 million euro in comparison with about 35 million euro in the first quarter 2009. The development was attributable to lower inventories and increasing liabilities, which in total were higher than the increase in receivables triggered by the upturn in the business. Earnings per share developed favorably too and stood at 0.92 versus 0.74 in the first quarter of 2009. Please note that the average number of shares rose to 191.2 million shares from 164.8 million shares in the first quarter 2009 due to the capital increase at the end of last year. Changes in revenues. A little bit more detailed look at these figures. Revenues increased by 458 million euros, which corresponds to a rise of 43% year-on-year. As can be seen, positive volume and consolidation effects of 875 million euro in total due to the acquisition of Morton Salt were dampened by negative price and structure effects of 402 million euro. The latter are always very pronounced the more prices and volumes develop in different directions. Many of you still know this from last year when we had positive price effects but negative volume effects. Slide number four. This table should only be understood as providing a rough indication of how prices have developed. Factors like freight costs, exchange rates, and product mix distort this picture. Year-on-year, we saw the long-expected sharp increase in volumes in Europe, driven by the strong demand from the trade sector, which again needed to build up low inventories. Overseas markets saw a normalizing demand too. Average European prices fell more strongly than overseas prices, as the level of prices in Q1 2009 was higher in Europe than in overseas markets. Quarter-on-quarter, we observed a doubling in European volumes, whereas overseas volumes remained at this good level achieved in the fourth quarter of  2009. The contracts concluded with Chinese and Indian customers at the end of this last year and the beginning of this year, and the subsequent announcement of a new price level for K+S MOP at 285 euro led to regained confidence among distributors. In our opinion, international potash prices in the first quarter of 2010 have likely bottomed out, but we are still far from scarcity and therefore do not expect significant price hikes in the near future. Slide five. With salt now having gained a greater proportion of our revenues and income, we would like to provide you with more details on volumes and pricing like in potash. Year-on-year volumes increased strongly, mainly due to the consolidation of Morton Salt and the already discussed good winter weather overall. Without Morton Salt, volumes in the icing salt would have increased by 5%, whereas other crystallized salts would have increased by 4%. Quarter-on-quarter, prices in the icing salt remained stable as prices for the winter season were already contracted during the bidding season in the previous year, as well as positive currency effects. Prices for other crystallized salt increased moreover due to currency effects and a slight increase in prices. Following normal winter patterns, volumes in the first quarter significantly exceeded those in the fourth quarter, which already included more salt. Going forward, and based on a 10-year average, we expect volumes of around 21 million tons, divided into approximately 12 million tons of the icing salt and approximately 9 million tons in the remaining salt product groups, all figures excluding brine. In 2010, however, due to the better-than-normal de-icing salt business so far, we project a volume of around 22 million tons, driven by a slightly higher de-icing salt business of a good 13 million tons. Let's now turn to the business segment development in the first quarter, slide number six. Potash and magnesium products revenues rose by 36% to about 500 million euro due to increased volume demand. Due to a fixed cost degression, the EBIT1 was up by as much as 55% and amounted to 150 million euro. Nitrogen fertilizer revenues and EBIT rose by 13% as well as 79%, as the utilization of production capacity was significantly higher year on year, and positive volume effects managed to compensate for negative price effects. Moreover, earnings were no longer adversely affected by restructuring measures. The salt business mainly benefited from consolidation effects. No wonder. Revenues were up by 278 million euro, of which Morton Salt contributed about 270 million euro. First quarter operating earnings amounted to 108 million euro and were thus around 28 million euro higher than the same period in the previous year. We will have a closer look to the different factors of the salt business on the following slide. Although not decisive on the group level, but to complement the picture, complementary business revenues increased by 14% to 33 million euro, driven by volume and price effects in the waste management and recycling area and volume factors in animal hygiene products. Logistics sales benefited from a higher transportation volume with rising demand for fertilizers. Logistics and waste management were equally accountable for the significant rise in earnings. As mentioned, a little bit more specifically to the salt business. Reporting earnings, operating earnings for the salt business in Q1 amounted to around, as mentioned, 108 million euro, of which Morton Salt contributed 32 million euro. When adjusting operating earnings by one-time effects from the revaluation of Morton Salt inventories, measured accordingly to IFRS by 12 million euro, and by one-time effects of about 20 million euro from ESCO in connection with the disclosure of an unprofitable site in France and unscheduled depreciation on property, plant and equipment in the Netherlands, we arrive at underlying operating earnings for the salt business of around 141 million euro. Please note that this calculation has not been adjusted for depreciations in the framework of purchase price allocation, which amounted to 16.2 million euro. The reported EBITDA on the salt business came in at 146.4 million euro and is seen to be the more meaningful figure for assessing the earnings capacity of our salt business segment. Slide number 8. We still expect 2010 to be a transitional year in the potash market. As a result of lower trade sectors inventories, lower soil potash content following two very good harvests, and the lower application of fertilizers since autumn 2008, for 2010 we assume an overall sales volume of 45 to 50 million tons, compared to our previous assumptions of around 45 million tons, and reported worldwide sales of 32 million tons in the year 2009. Our updated forecast is especially based on the fact that both trade sector and farmers in Europe increased their demand to a higher degree than previously expected. As Western Europe and North America were the markets the hardest hit last year, we believe these will see the highest recovery levels in 2010. For the time being, we have not changed our 2011 and beyond estimates. Should we see a sustained demand pattern in the course of this year, we might be inclined to turn to more positive here as well. Finally, our outlook for 2010 on slide number 9. The K+S Group, as already forecasted in our financial report for the year 2009, we expect a significant increase in revenues and a significantly higher operating earnings, the EBIT1, 2010. justified by a recovery in volumes as well as consolidation effects. In the potash and magnesium business segment, we have raised our sales volumes forecast of just under 6 million tons to a good 6.5 million tons due to a good spring season in Europe. We now expect a tangible increase in revenues, despite significantly lower average potash prices in 2010 compared to last year. Operating earnings should significantly increase on the back of total costs, which will rise to less than full extent due to fixed cost degression. The nitrogen fertilizers business segment, will see a significant increase in revenues based on higher sales volumes. Forecasting lower average mineral fertilizer prices than in the previous year, we expect a moderately positive result. Because of the consolidation effect of over 500 million euro of revenues due to the first-time inclusion of Morton Salt over the entire year, and a good start for the de-icing salt in the first quarter, we expect a significant increase in revenues for the salt business segment. This will be supported by a relatively stable development in revenues in the food grade and industrial salt segment, as well as moderate sales volume increases regarding salt for chemical use because of an emerging economic recovery. Taking into account lower adverse effects than in 2009, because of the acquisition and integration process going according to plan, we see a significantly higher EBIT1. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening so far. My colleagues, Christian Herrmann and myself, are now happy to take your questions. Please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. Our first question will come from Martin Rödiger from Schaffreux. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have two questions. First, on the rejection of proposal for new authorized capital at the AGM yesterday. Did you prepare this decision by talking to your shareholder BASF in advance of the AGM? Second question is on M&A. Mr. Felker was quoted in Reuters yesterday that K-Plus is looking for acquisition targets in the potash fertilizer sector. Does the rejection of the new authorized capital limit your abilities for external growth? And does the quote by Mr. Felker mean a change in strategic priorities? I thought that you prefer to look for a joint venture partner in potash and you look for the Rosleben potash mine.
Norbert Steiner answering both questions. We are a company and the board of directors and the supervisory board that is, of course, in contact with shareholders of every kind. That means small shareholders as well as big shareholders. And therefore, it is for us self-understandingly that we have contacts with BASF and also Eurochem and also big financial investors in preparation of the annual general meeting or afterwards. And in so far, this has been the case. On the other hand, we have introduced a policy already years ago that we are not commenting on the behavior and on the voting of any shareholder. And this has been the policy so far and will continue to be the policy so far. And therefore, I do not at all comment on that. With regard to the second question and the quoting of Mr. Felker, there seems from time to time to be some misunderstandings in the press. And also, if I look to the press which I received on our yesterday's meeting, there was my name in connection with acquisitions in the potash business readable. So what we have said so far has not been changed at all. We have made a good step forward in the salt business, and we are now consolidating Morton Salt. On the other hand, we want to strengthen our fertilizer business segment generally, and there with a high priority to the potash business. With view to our willingness and ability maybe also, we see what we can do and what we won't do. And what we won't do will be the mega acquisition in a way that has been recommended by some of the newspapers as of today. And as all these potential targets are of a size so far, at least, that they will be significantly more expensive. They would be more expensive than the Morton Salt deal. We have always said we are concentrating in the development of the access to new capacities via different measures. And this has been unchanged. And if you follow that what Cato has stated in the past, you will find that wording over at least the last 12 to 16 or 18 months, and this has not changed at all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And now we will move to Andrew Scott from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
So good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Just on the salt business, I just wonder if you could share any thoughts on costs going forward for the salt business, and also the pricing outlook as you go into perhaps into the next season. Thank you for any thoughts on that.
I think you, Andrew, you are mainly referring to the icing salt.
And, but the whole division would be helpful.
Due to the season, to the season.
And, sure, sure.
This is, of course, a question how bidding processes will be conducted in Europe, in North America. And as they are not yet started, we cannot see any tendency so far. And therefore, I would only speculate on that. So, of course, what we try to do is to do our very best in pricing. And the higher the volumes that we have under contract afterwards, better it is for more or less the absorption of the fixed cost of our plant so far. Therefore, we do not see any big tendencies that we have higher costs compared to the situation, but it's always a question of the utilization rate of our works, and this can only be projected more or less on normal scale, and therefore I think this cost item is under control. What we also will register should the exchange rate between the euro and the dollar stay as it is or even develop in a stronger dollar, the better it is for us. But this is something which you know from the past already.
Sure. Can I just sneak a second question? The comment you made on pricing in potash, I think you said, you know, you're generally cautious on near-term pricing. How much of that is your general caution on what you see in terms of inventory or capacity utilization, and how much of it is a reference to seasonality? Thank you.
This will be done by Joachim.
Well, I guess the quantity aspect is still dominating, because what we want to see, especially in Europe, is that especially in the third quarter of this year, we will have a strong pre-storage, which is the normal pattern, and sales then only being later at the end of the year or even in the first quarter of 2011. So there is a strong quantity perspective when it comes to Europe. From my point of view, there is still an open question about the development in China, because there the situation still is unclear. And thirdly, I think we still have to see that in 2010 we have not a real overcapacity. We are just growing back into capacity utilization worldwide, but we have the capacity to produce 57, 58 million. And we estimate the market at maximum 50, a little bit less than 50. So we are still having the tendency of a buyer's market, at least in some areas. So price potential is rather limited. Specialties, perhaps, yes. In the odd case, yes, we can do that. Is that okay, Scott?
Yeah, thank you very much.
And now we have questions from Gunnar Kors from the Berenberg Bank.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you very much for taking my questions. Basically, first question would be also on the potash unit. You reported a very high volume in the first quarter. I would expect basically maybe a bit less, but more or less a similar level like in Q1 in terms of volumes. So that would mean taking your upgraded guidance for the full year in terms of volumes, a significant decline in terms of volumes in the second half of the year, notwithstanding your seasonality. Do you have an explanation for that, or are you rather cautious? Second question would be on the inventory level in potash, so your own inventory level. Could you maybe give us the change compared with the year end, how it changed, and what would be a normal inventory level for you? And the final question would be on PPA. And can we now expect also for the next quarter a stable figure you have reported for Q1, or will it gradually decline? Thank you very much.
I start with the last question. PPA is certainly going to connected with Morton Salt, and we have given the guidance that we expect over a longer period of time a purchase price allocation in the neighborhood of 40 million plus. But it depends also on the currency. So this is what we can say on an annual basis, certainly. Yeah. And of course, as we have seen that very voluminous business in the first quarter, you can maybe expect lower PPA allocations in the second half, in the second and the third quarter, and higher again in the fourth quarter. This is not linearly over the entire year, but all in all, the PPA will be amounting, but again, connected with the exchange rate to 40 million plus.
Okay, thank you.
Joachim Felker will do the first and the second.
Okay, then go to the questions concerning our stock situation. You know that usually we carry around 650,000 tons of stocks, and then we feel comfortable because we have a rather broad product portfolio. At present, I think we are around 800, which is the same that as at the end of the year, but that has to do with shipments being prepared for Brazil, where we are just preparing the season, and I'm rather positive when it comes to this. The second question then is quantities in total and seasonality. As we said before, we have been expecting a very strong rebound, especially in Western Europe. That has happened. Our distributors have had very low stocks. They were replenishing the stocks, and also farmers are buying the product, so that was the very good news. Second quarter usually is lower, and third quarter is preparing, building up stocks, but depending on the possibilities of distributors to buy. We are dealing with second used storage capacity, so it's depending a little bit on the harvest of wheat and on grains. So I wouldn't say we are cautious, but we are realistic. We estimate we have a rather good picture on our sales in China and in India. I think we have a good picture already, at least for quarter two and three, when it comes to Brazil and some South Asian destinations. But Europe, we are still hesitant. I think the financial crisis is not yet over. Distributors will be very careful in building up stocks. So when we see a clearer picture when it comes to Europe, then we might adjust our forecast.
Thank you. Maybe then one follow-up on Brazil. I mean, we can hear in the market, obviously, they're a bit hesitant to accept higher prices, so $25 per ton or whatever. Is it for you at the moment normal business as usual, or you also see some reluctance in terms of your potential
quality-wise, also when you see the last year, which was a bad year for fertilizer people all over, our Brazilian business contributed quality-wise very, very strongly, and I also expect that this year. So quantity-wise, we will have no problems, but why should big clients accept a price increase without bargaining? So we are in this process, and it will take some time, and let's wait and see how much potential we have there. You remember we have also done the same thing in Europe when we announced a price increase of 12 euros at the beginning of this year, and when the demand really built it up, then we could realize a big portion of this. In Brazil, we have to see.
Right. Thank you very much.
And now we will move to Niall Taylor from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I wonder if I could ask a question on your slide 8 capacity outlook, please, and if you're prepared to disclose which, out in 2013, which of the major projects you are categorizing as at risk. That would be my main question, please.
I think, Norbert Steiner, again, the situation has not changed so far. And in the past, we have been very, let's say, had very big reserve in assuming that the nowadays Vale project in Argentina, which was announced to be ready for production in 2013, will be there just in time, because we have not yet seen the final decision of the board of Vale to put money into that project. There has been some idea about a new solution mining project in Brazil, but according to the own statements of Vale, this is not before 2014 ready for production. And other problems might also arise somewhere in connection with Russian, announcements. Therefore, there in the past at least, and this is also a basis of our assumption, we have also and always seen delays, and therefore also this picture, or this part of the picture, has not changed.
Thank you very much.
I can, and perhaps I can, this is Achim speaking, perhaps I can just give you a small hint. If over the last 3 or 4 weeks you read FNB, you have some information about discussions between some Russian producers and Rosneft, which is the agency which is responsible to adjust milestones in licenses being granted. And when you see the discussions are basically putting milestones more into the future, not realizing them now. So the word risk, I think, is the right word there.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
And now we have questions from Sophie Yordia from Citi.
Yes, afternoon. Just got two questions, actually. You mentioned earlier that the situation in China was still a bit unclear as to sort of potash demand. I wonder whether you could just clarify your thoughts on that market. And second, just on currency, I wondered whether you could remind me the sort of, I don't know, ready reckoner for the effect on group EBIT for shift in euro-dollar rates, all else being equal, now that you've got the Morton Salt acquisition as well. Thanks.
Well, then I do China. As you know, we have, an unregular pattern in the ordering behavior of China since, almost 36 months now. And what we know is that in this period of time, Chinese investors have heavily put money into the development of salt lakes in various provinces. That means they are not gaining potash by mining, but by evaporation ponds. The difficulty is that most of these provinces, we have a very strong winter, which means that November to March, they cannot harvest, they cannot produce potash. So we don't really know when they announce the capacity how much they really use. And it depends on whether how much they can actually, we call it harvest. So there's a black hole for us. The second one is that we have not a very clear picture on how the NPK producers, who are one of the most important segments in China, how they are covering the market at present. They are numerous. Some of them are small. Some of them are big. And we know that over a certain period of time, they have changed their formula spectrum. So they have used lower P's and lower K's because it was too dear for them. And we have no idea how their stocking position is. What we have at present is we have a discussion in IFA, which is the World Association for Fertilizers, trying to establish how big the Chinese market really is. And it seems that we have overestimated it in 2009. We are still in this process, and that's why I said I have not a very good picture of how China will develop. The tendency is very clear. There will be less imports for the time being, at least until the Chinese will go more into a balanced fertilization. The trend still is that they use too much nitrogen because it's locally available. It's produced based on coal. Don't talk about the environment. We all know it's not the best way to produce this. They use too much nitrogen. They use too little phosphate and too little potash. So that's the long term. So the market is a little bit unclear.
And Sophia, this is Peter Nollenkamp. I will take on the currency question. I'd like to remind you that the effect, the currency effect on our results is probably not very high because first in the potash segment we have around 700 to 800 million of transaction volume where we have a long-term hedging policy, basically limiting our risk that the dollar becomes weaker and ours becomes stronger. This is in tendency positive, but we are having long-term hedges in place, so this will rather be an effect which will take place in the next year, so not dramatically. Concerning the salt, we are not hedging the business volume, we are just hedging the result, the net result, which we expect from Morton Salt, and the effect of the currency on that net result is not very high.
Great, thank you very much.
And now we have questions from John de Wattville from Nomura.
Yes, hi, good afternoon, John de Wattville from Nomura. A couple of questions on capacities. On your press release, you talk about your current capacity being below 8 million tons. And before 2008, you had several years at 8 million tons and slightly above. So that suggests that your capacity reduced a little since the last couple of years. Now, we know from your annual report that the Syngmansal mine, has only 9 years reserve. Can you just tell us, will we see a gradual decline of capacity for the next decade, or will that be a step effect where capacity will decline at the end of the decade? So the second question is obviously about greenfield projects to add more capacity in the portfolio. Can you just elaborate if the environment is more favorable right now for you, to discuss some greenfield projects, in remote regions with, potentially with low-cost potash? And the last question, in 2008, you were considering Rosleben. Can you update us on where you stand on that mine? Thank you.
Robert Steiner, trying to answer. On the second question, greenfield, the situation is improving if you compare price effects that we have seen in 2008 with price effects that we see right now. I think the normalization, I used to talk about normalization after 2009, also in respect of expansion, is something which was helpful. I cannot imagine that hypothetically if the license round in Russia would occur in 2010, then a company would pay about 1 billion euro to get that license anymore. So I think a lot of items are cheaper right now, and therefore the situation from the pure cost side of a greenfield activity, from my perspective, has improved compared to the year 2008. But we still are utilizing our rule of thumb, as you know, 1 billion for 1 million. And we have always said that it is just a rule of thumb, which cannot include every detail, area, transportation cost, necessity of infrastructure measures, energy production, and so on and so forth. Therefore, we look around and are continuing to monitor and to evaluate our projects And this has been the case 2 years ago and also today, and will continue until we come out with the news that we have found the project or one of the projects which we want to more or less to build up in the next future to come. It's more or less nothing which has to do with prices right now because of the long planning procedure where you can never predict how the prices will develop. But I would say from the tendency, the situation for greenfield activity has improved compared to the situation and to the hype situation that we have seen a couple of years ago. With respect to Rosneben, we have been advised that the agency that holds the mining rights there needs some more time to come to a decision. There are certainly talks, discussions between us and them, and certainly also from the agency and our competitor. And I have no precise date in which that decision will be done. We are still certainly interested. First question to Joachim, or shall I?
Sure, I'll try to answer. So I think we have met quite some time, and we have always discussed when you have a project, when you have a greenfield project, or when you start with a new mine, you should start your activities where you have the best iron ore. Well, not iron, potash ore.
And iron ore.
Iron with potash and so on.
Iron ore. But they don't do underground mining. So what you do usually, you start where the place where you have the best results. Now, if your mine gets older, then usually your productivity is going down. You are getting into some areas of the field where the content of the ore is not as good. Now, what you see from our publications recently are results which are moving in target, because what we usually do, we have a running exploration system, even in the operating mines, where we forecast how many years are left. So you can have a surprise that suddenly we would say in 2 years' time, it's still the same period of time ahead of what we say now, because it's an ongoing process. And what you see from our publications in the yearly report is the status, the knowledge we know now, it can change, but surprisingly, it can change only to the better and not to the worse. Because what we report now, we know what is coming can only be an improvement. Oh. So is that answering your question?
There was again.
Yes, I understand.
You mentioned 8+ million tons. And this was the fact as we had sold material out of our inventories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our communicated capacity was always slightly below 8. Yeah, and therefore, this is more or less the factors which Joachim mentioned.
Thank you. Talking about inventories, do you intend to keep the current level of inventories, or should we expect inventories to go, to some 100,000 tons below the current levels?
Now, what we, as I said, what we have now, 800, is a little bit too high still. We are feeling perfect with 600. At the end of the year, it could be a little bit higher again, because it depends. You wouldn't believe it. It depends on weather conditions in the harbors, whether we can get it out or not. And you know, two ships or three ships nowadays is 100,000 tons, and that's it. And we look at 31st of December, so it's a moving target. But 600, 650, we feel fine.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
And now we will move to Andreas Heine from UniCredit.
Yeah, good afternoon. At first, I'd like to ask again the question on the U.S. dollar and the hedging. I thought that your hedging policy is that you have, in the first place, calls so that you profit from, so that you profit when the U.S. dollar becomes stronger, and you do not have the disadvantage if it becomes weaker. So I thought that you profit from the strength of the U.S. dollar, or more the weakness of the euro. That's the first question. And secondly, Could you please a little bit describe the, also the US dollar and the influence of the European potash price? I thought that the potash price usually is denominated in US dollars. So that means if the overseas price in US dollar stays flat but the euro becomes weaker, that it might offer you to increase the price in Europe in euro terms. And last but not least, could you elaborate what the cost savings are you will have as an advantage of the charge that you booked in the first quarter by closing the salt mine? Thank you.
I think this is something which will be below 10 million per year. The savings on the closing of the salt mine or of the salt operations, better to say, this is not the mine. It will be a mid-sized single-digit figure per year. Yeah.
Okay.
Joachim?
Well, I can do the US dollar and euro issue. Now, what we have, first of all, our costs in potash division all in euros. Our, let's call it home market, is more or less Europe. So there, that is where we do our pricing based on cost, based on market possibilities. All the exports are in dollars. Now, what we will not do, we will not try to adjust one of those depending on the other. What we have corridors. What we have with our clients is, let's say, some 2 or 3 months of advanced bookings. So it's impossible that when the dollar weakens, we react with the euro or vice versa. So we have an indication. Of course, if the US dollar price in the export markets is going down, then we will follow with the euro, but we will not play it based on current exchange rate. So it's a matter of level, but not on daily exchange rates. It's impossible to do.
And if you look back, Norbert Steiner, the beginning of the year 2010, you saw that we have, of course, looked a little bit to the exchange rate when we placed the 285, but we initially and directly announced the 12 euro increase as of March without having had the knowledge how the dollar exchange rate would go to. And therefore, there is a certain corridor in which we are more or less, I would not say completely independent, but where we can move irrespective of the currency development.
Okay.
And for clarification, this is Jan-Peter again. I repeat that, of course, the transaction volume in potash, these 700, 800 millions I was mentioning earlier, from this part we will profit if the dollar really remains that strong. But given all the fluctuations we have seen during the year, remember we started at 150 just a couple of weeks ago. Now we have to be at 125. Nobody can tell you where we are at the end of the year. But of course, if it stays at this level, this is positive for us. Mm. But for the time being, we cannot really calculate with that.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Now we have a question from Cesco Meyer-Weglin from HSBC.
Hi, Seth, if I may. First of all, you said that farmers are also buying the products which the distributors are buying. Is this a feedback from the distribution stage? And what are they saying, what the end demand is currently and what the farmers are thinking? And secondly, on the financial result and also the free cash flow, is the Q1 figure a good run rate also for the next quarters, or would both figures, the financial result and the free cash flow, would be too high?
Well, of course, it's a feedback from our distributors in Europe, where we are talking on a day-to-day basis, so it's confirmed, and we can, you know, when you're in the fertilizer business for many, many years, you're getting so crazy when you drive around in your car or you go by train, you see, you have seen the fertilizer spreaders all over the place, and we had a certain time window where the weather conditions were very preferable. So farmers really took the product and sprayed it. So it's confirmed.
One follow-up question maybe to this question. Do you think that the farmers are also doing some restocking or pre-buying before the prices are increasing, or is this real demand which will be really applied then later?
Farmers in Europe are so small structured, they have hardly any possibility to store. What they store, they put perhaps some micronutrients or something like this. They have a few bags, but usually they don't have it. They are totally depending on distribution. They are keeping the stocks of the retailers or the first distribution. They have the stocks, so farmers don't store. They cannot speculate with that.
Concerning the run rate of cash flow from the first quarter, no, you cannot say that this is typical for all of the year. We have a strong seasonality in our business, of course, and the cash generation in the quarters differ quite substantially. And the salt business is quite easy to understand, but also from the potash side, as Joachim has outlined earlier, there is a strong seasonality, and therefore you cannot just multiply the first quarter by four.
This was a very sophisticated attempt to lead us on ice, but we have recognized that. Next question.
The next question will come from Wolfgang Fickus from the West LB. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Most of the questions already asked, but still I'm a little bit confused, and I tell you why. It is because you say that nobody talks about the possibility that prices actually might go down a little bit. Why do I ask that right now? Because you say that you say that likely the prices have bottomed out. But on the other hand, you are telling us that in the second half 2010, there is a possibility of quite a significant sequential volume decline. And I don't understand that. If the prices are really accepted and the trade wouldn't fear any kind of price pressure or whatsoever, why would they be so cautious in Europe? Because that's what I understand from Mr. Völker, that the European trade is a little bit cautious maybe in the second half. I mean, might be. That's what you said.
Okay, prices are leveled out in a very similar way. When you look at what the Indian market has done, they have booked product until March 2011. It's fixed, it's set, it's done, and the deliveries are running. There have been some conclusions with China, the same. So this is done, and that's what we call it leveled out. What we have in Europe, we have seen what we have expected and what we have communicated, that we will have restocking of distributors in the first quarter, and what we have done also, that's what Norbert said, already at the beginning of the year, seeing this, we have announced a price increase in March. Some people thought, why do they do that? It's relatively simple. It's the normal pattern of a European fertilizer season. Shortly before application, the prices to distributors are the highest. Now, seasonality application now is coming to an end. That is why second quarter quantities usually in Europe are lower in demand. Farmers, distributors will not keep stock, then they will wait. Then comes the harvest of wheat, grain, what have you. And whenever they have stocking capacity on the distributors level, then they are starting to fill in fertilizers. Now, as I said before, they are still very cautious because they still have hangovers of the last year. They have had misspeculations, they have had write-offs. They have the headline of managing working capital, so we want to see how much they will store, and we have to see also how some agricultural prices will develop. Mm. That's why we are very cautious, and that's why I also said we have a better, we can actually better forecast our export business, strong in Brazil, where the demand is good, where the farmers are industrialized, where they have a good share in the world trade of ag commodities. We can very good see our forecast when it comes to palm oil industries in Southeast Asia. And that is why we are still waiting again for the good news for the third quarter, and then we will comment what we will do. That also goes together with the questions of stocks. As I said, we still have 800,000 tons. We are feeling comfortable with 600,000. But because we are not in the position to decide what will happen in the third quarter, we are also cautious in keeping perhaps from the tendency a little bit more higher stocks. Because if really the third quarter is strong in Europe, then we need it. Was that better now?
The overall sentiment of the agricultural sector in Europe has been a very decisive factor in the last 2 years. And since we have not seen a 100% return to normality, which is definitely, so far as we can see, it not the case, we should be a little bit more cautious in making more or less prognosis and outlook for the second half of the year. Should there be a good harvest, should also the expectations with view to the agricultural prices in Europe meet the expectations of the farmers, then of course the likelihood is there that volumes are running. But what we did was intentionally done, and it would be for us much easier to say, instead of about 6.5 million, some higher figure, which would more or less be more attractive to many, many people in the markets. We didn't do that intentionally on the reasons that we have tried to explain, and I think these reasons from our perspective and the nearness to the market and the behavior of the agricultural sector is well based.
That's very clear. Thank you.
And now we have a follow-up question from Niall Tyler from JP Morgan.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking this question as well. I just wanted to cover a couple of things. Firstly, on the trend this season to price potash deliveries on a delivered basis, whether you see that as presenting a potential risk to your netback margin should freight costs continue to rise. And secondly, I think it's probably fairly self-explanatory, but presumably the comment on inventories and sequential stability in inventories suggests that the you didn't see any meaningful margin impact one way or the other of as has been the case in some quarters of selling out of inventory in your potash EBIT number.
Okay, this is Christian speaking. Mr. Felker will cover the margin question with regard to freight costs compared to the delivered prices. Just with your second question, Neil, inventories, selling out of inventories certainly is, for the cost base, a burden. Mm. We have to see, as Mr. Felker pointed out, if we really are at the end of the year at 600,000, maybe we are slightly higher. But if we are at 600,000 and now we are at 800,000, that means 200,000 less, and certainly this will have a margin impact. Remember from the March conference call we had in Frankfurt that this can be a burden of 30, 40 million euro selling out of for this amount of product. But we have to see where we really end up at the year. Generally, selling out of inventories is a burden for our cost base, certainly, yes.
When it comes to freight cost development and margins, I think we have commented a few times that, especially to one of our most important export markets, to Brazil, we have long-term commitments with partners when it comes to shipping costs. They are based on US dollars, so what and Peter Non can be explained, that's the bad news, as long as the dollar is strong. But on the other hand, then our selling prices are also in dollars, so the leverage on the selling price is much, much higher than the one on the freight cost. And the other direction, the product flow which goes into Asia, is basically on containers. There the availability is not as good as before. So we see a price increase in average, and in some cases we might even use bulkers to go there. So that's will be a disadvantage, but it's not really a fundamental change, and it's not which is hurting us so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And now we have a question from Ran Benani from Exxon.
Good afternoon. I have three questions, if I may. The first one is coming back to your comments on Brazil. I believe you, ICL, as well, have gained some market share last year versus U.S. Peers in the country. Do you believe this is something that is going to be sustainable this year or not? And if you can elaborate on that and how much it represented in terms of total volumes, if possible. And the second question, I just wanted to get more details around, because we have not seen that through 2009 and for our own modeling, in terms of in the impact in terms of realized prices through Q2, Q3, and Q4 in Europe, as you are re-incentivizing distributors to store ahead of the season. And if you have already price lists in mind for that, that would be very helpful. And as well, I wanted to come back on your comment of the fact that in Europe you have realized strong sales on the 297 euro a ton. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so first, Brazil. Now, when I look back over a longer period of time, then we have always had more selling potential in Brazil than product. And that has led to a very simple development. We have, selected a client portfolio over many, many years, which is very stable. And I would say they are first-class clients, AAA clients. And in the last year, world crisis, economical crisis, these clients performed extraordinarily well. That means we have had very stable sales to Brazil. We have had no problems with collecting our money, and I think that this will also happen this year. So it has to do with our business model over many, many years, and it has to do with the selection of clients. It has to do with loyalty and things like this. Now, what you mentioned in Europe, and I come back also to the 12 euros we have announced for March. The discussions we have with European distributors is that we want to come back to the old pattern, which gives them the stability and planning using their availability in stocks, and which gives us the stability also in pricing methods, I would say. So what we usually do, we have, in France it's called HL, in English it's price gliding system, which is not a good word, I would say. It's more prices in steps. So usually in a normal fertilizer year, the lowest price will be in June. And then we will have each month a price increase, and this price increase is partly mirroring and covering the stock keeping cost of the distributors. So each month it's climbing up, and at the end of the year when they go sell their products to retailers or to farmers, they will be charged with the highest price, and also their buyers will be charged with the highest price. And that's why they get a recompensation for stock keeping. That's the traditional pattern, and it's good because then they can really also talk to our supply chain in a much, much better way. We can optimize transportation, and a lot of stability is given by this. But again, that's why we are cautious for the third quarter of this year. The big ones, they are prepared because they have had good business in the first quarter. The smaller ones, they are still thinking about how much should we give into the system, when do we start, and so on. So it's something we want to do. It's giving stability to the market, but I'm not yet sure that we can say we will achieve it 100%.
Okay, just wanted to know, because I guess some other companies in the fertilizer segment, like Yara, do have the same pattern in Europe. Are we talking 4 euro a ton or something like that in terms of order of magnitude? I'm not looking for precise numbers. Or will it be something more important in terms of climbing prices?
What usually you have, 3 to 4 euros, that's the monthly rebate they get, or the monthly increase actually.
Okay, and for the 290.
You know, the reason is what we are doing actually, we are competing with the grain guys. So when they put wheat into the stocks, they also have to pay this premium. And we have limited stocking capacity, and that's why this system is built up over many, many years.
Okay.
That's the background.
Okay. And just on your comment of the 297 euro ton, is it something, because, and that was commented previously in the call, the 425 is not sticking in Brazil, did not stick obviously in China or Southeast Asia, and I understood that the 297 as well was not really something that was implemented in Europe. So I wanted to double check that with your comments if we have made good sales at those levels.
Yeah, what we do for you guys to understand us a little bit better, we give this price to the MOP standard, 297. But from this, we are then calculating granular. But from this, we go then down and calculate European products like Chinese, like Kieselrit and stuff like this. So, but we could manage to have this 297, and it was accepted.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
And the 297 was accepted by our distributors.
Okay. So in terms of realized price, we should see higher realized price in Q2 versus Q1 then?
Jim, this is Christian now. This is a question of product mix and regional mix.
Okay.
Price was accepted, that's correct. The price increase was accepted for MOP granular in Europe. And if you compare, if you take the recent, the current dollar rate, it refers to roughly $380.
Okay.
So this is actually in line with overseas prices. It might be that the second quarter average price for the whole portfolio can differ from this increase because depending on the regional and product mix. If we sell a higher proportion of Kieselrite, for example, which is selling at a lower price compared to MOP, or if we, let's say, increase our proportion to India compared to Europe or other destinations, then certainly the average price might is affected by that.
Okay. Thanks very much for the clarification.
The next question is from Annette Weber from the BHF Bank.
Yes, good afternoon. Just one more question, or two more questions actually, on the pricing side in Europe. I understand it that the 297 are now the price that you're selling at. They're 100% accepted in the market in Q2. Is that right?
For the respective product, yes.
Mm-hmm. For the product?
For the product concerned.
It is expected.
Mm-hmm.
At present.
Okay.
But we have not yet decided how to start in June
with the specialty products.
With the specialty products.
With the specialty products, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And given an earlier question on the change in the exchange rates, I also take it from your comments in the conference call that are relatively cautious that a possible 10 euro something price increase over the next 2-3 months is not yet on the cards.
No, we are not thinking about pricing systems in Europe based on exchange rates, euro, US dollar.
And what is your view on the Brazilian price hike, the $25 that are still being discussed? When do you actually see them coming through? What is your guess with regard to this?
I wouldn't know. We are still discussing it. But if we would have got it easily, we would have definitely reported on it. So there is still a fight within the Brazilian market, where the big importers or the big farmers are being accepted or not. And I think we need some patience there. But big clients are in a situation of covering a few hundred thousand tons. So they have a lot of bargaining potential, and they, of course, arguing, why should we pay more than the Indians or the Chinese? That's a good question.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Our final question will be a follow-up question from John de Wattville from Nomura.
Yes. Hi. Again, me. Two questions, actually. First of all, coming back on the exchange rate impact on potash pricing in Europe, I understand your potash prices in Europe are quarterly on the, you know, assuming a continued weakening trend of the euro against the dollar, would that be fair to expect you to increase price in Q3 to adjust the euro price to basically the higher dollar? Second question, nitrogen division. Actually, no one asked a question on that division. Can you just provide, there's a lot of different moving parts in this division, and I'm wondering if you could add some color and give some direction to us. Obviously, we understand the consumer market is pretty weak at the moment because of aggressive pricing action from some of your competitors. Ammonia prices went up. Urea prices went down, which could mean that nitrate prices could go down. Can you just share with us your view of those different dynamics and how will that impact your business on the next quarters? Thank you.
Okay, so first of all, coming back to looking into the crystal ball, how the US dollar and euro exchange rate will develop, I think we will not depend our pricing policy on the development of the exchange rate. We will, of course, have an orientation, but for us it's more important to have a stability on the midterm and really introducing again the old pricing systems which I explained before. When I look into the nitrogen division, and John, you know they are, it's combined of a lot of various product portfolio. And you mentioned one, and then I start with this one also. It's a consumer segment. Consumer segment is under a lot of pressure. I think the consumer spending is a little bit different than it has before. We have a very keen competition in some areas from internationally active companies, but also from local companies protecting their markets. So it's a rather difficult business. What we also have had, because of the very strong winter, we have had a late harvest of our turfs, which is partly influencing our availability to supply, but this is improving. So, but you're right, consumer business is relatively difficult. The exact opposite of it is the nitrogen, part of the nitrogen business. We have, in some areas, we have shortages. We have suddenly not enough sulfate of ammonia, which has to do with availability of product. And it's also partly driven that in the first quarter of this year, sulfur has become again an element which was asked very strongly in agriculture worldwide, especially also in China. So sulfate of ammonia, which we sell for BASF and for LANXESS, our division has no problem. When it comes to straight fertilizers, you are right. The influence in this area, the driver for pricing policy is it's the gas price, not only the ammonia price, it's the gas price. We have seen over the first quarter suddenly an increase in ammonia prices. We have seen an increase in urea prices. This came to a stop. There's a lot of discussion about India. Everybody is waiting for imports of urea to India, which then should stabilize the world market. We have a Ukrainian producer who stopped production because he has got a price increase for gas. He's not competitive anymore. So this market is a little bit, I wouldn't say under pressure, but it needs a little bit of orientation. When you look into another big segment, which we also show in our publications always, is NPK, so complex fertilizers. There we have seen in the first quarter good news. Yara, all the other big NPK producers announced that they come back into higher capacity utilization. But also they are cautious when it comes to the second half of the year. Also Yara announced, we want to see how the market develops, and if necessary, we cut production again in order to stabilize it. So it's a mixed picture. We are far away from the record results of 2008, but we are also far away from the disastrous year of 2009. And you see, we got quite a good swing into Q1, and we hope that we can continue with this very positive trend.
Thank you.
Any questions?
We have no further questions.
Okay. Then I would like to thank you very much for the participation in our conference call on the Q1 report. I would like to announce already, which you already know, of course, that our Q2 results will be out on the 12th of August. So we will meet again on the phone. And in that interim period, you might see from our calendar, financial calendar, that we are quite often on the road. So if you want to get in touch, not only by phone, you'll be able to do that. Thank you very much and all the best for you. Bye-bye.